here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Greg Pappas in the studio. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 10. They were down 8 or 9 last night, maybe as much as 10, so we flipped a little bit. NASDAQ futures up 30. This is following a pretty big drain on the close on Friday. We were up in the morning, as all recall, and the PPI number came out a little hot, so we flew down, and the rest of the day we marched our way back to unchanged and even up a little bit, and all of a sudden on the close we managed to drop 30 spoos like we were. Thank God the closing bell went off, Greg. We'd have gone lower.
And we got FOMC this week, don't we?
We got FOMC, and we have CPI tomorrow. So yeah, we got stuff, as they say.
Stay tuned for
everybody's expecting shenanigans. Yeah, half a point, and which would bring what Fed funds up to 4.25.
Something still under the traditional, the historical 5.
Well, but depends on how far you're back in history. For young people, that's not history. For you, I mean, when was it ever 4? You don't really remember 2007, do you, or whatever.
I was at Merrill Lynch at the time.
Yeah.
As an intern.
There you go.
That was some interesting days.
See, I thought you were 25 or something.
The company is no longer in business.
Mm.
Merrill Lynch?
Mm.
They're there.
Wow. Well, they were bailed out by Bank of America, but that was very lucky on their part. And I think it's government forced.
Yeah, and the CEO wandered off with all his dough. Yeah, I love that
part. Stan O'Neill had a $110 million parachute, I believe.
Yeah, and then he wandered off. And
I would wander off, too.
Well, yeah.
Disappear.
Wonder where the hell he is, Monaco?
Hope he paid some taxes.
Well, let's hope so. So this week is, any kind of rally here is, until proven otherwise, appears to be a little suspect. If who the hell knows, if we end up going to... a period of time where the market is not racing up every year, where everybody is, just giddy about that.
Stocks went from, I think they had zero gains from 2000 to 2012 or so.
Well, we had zero gains from 1997 to 2007, because that's when we started the Protected Index Program, and we were up and the market was down, and we were, and a couple times in there was down over 20%, and we were never down. So
nailed it.
Yeah, we did well. I mean, but still, we were only up like 11 or 12% on the decade, even though everybody else was down or even.
Yeah, there was a good video over the weekend on Yahoo with Howard Marks that really talked about are you ready for a period of prolonged either sideways or how aggressive do you intend to be where there isn't just the market dominating returns. So,
well, if you can get, 4.5% or 3.5 or 4 risk free, you can hit. Well, I mean, like T-bills or something or a bank. I mean, you can do that.
What's inflation?
Well, then that's a problem. One would hope that if inflation continues, that we would get more in interest. But that's Janet Yellen of it. I think she's probably the one who turned the thing around last night. If ever is a She was on 60 Minutes. I was listening to her on the radio, and she's talking about that the inflation has peaked and blah, blah, blah. And I actually think, even though she's totally self-serving, in my opinion, and really should be thrown out of government tomorrow. I mean, I don't really have a... Greg,
what's the likelihood on that?
None. She's the grandma gray hair.
99.8%.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it? I mean, I have such an odd, seemingly today, I have this very odd personality, but, you know, it's not like, you know, more mature people have a different view of the world, but there's this, as Lou calls it, he used to call tell Matty Weber he was a moral relativist.
Does moral relativist mean that you don't pass judgment on other things that are questionable?
You sort of generalize, and if there's a tribe in Zimbabwe or someplace, I'm not saying anything bad about Zimbabwe, where you cannibalism and you shrink people's heads or something, well, that's okay for them. They think it's okay. Well, no, it's not okay.
Moral.
Yeah, it's not okay. No,
sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. It's a.
If that's the way they operate, then let them be.
And so there's people who, in this day and age,
the shrunken heads come from alive people or dead people.
Yeah, in this day and age, think, well, what I'm complaining about, and railing on an individual, which I don't really like to do, but the lady was chairperson, and I think if you're female, you're still called a chairman, aren't you? Or chairperson, or whatever.
I'm not going to step into that trap.
Well, but either way, she was head of the Fed, which, in a lot of people's view, is the number one economic position in the world, right? And as a chairman, your group is charged with regulation of a lot of banks and industries and so forth. I mean, and in financial industries now. Theoretically, I think Greg.
It's a good thing she had so much experience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she came from where she was.
She was UCLA or some.
But she was a
she was department
San Francisco Fed chief or something, wasn't she? I mean, she was.
Yeah.
And but you know, she comes in, and she does this. You know, during the was the Obama administration is where she was, right? Well, who put her in there? Was it Obama? I think it was.
Yellen.
Yeah, that I'm pretty
right.
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she gets in there. And it's this thing with the Fed or with the bank, litmus tests and all this stuff and all this crap. Bottom line is, the banks lost so much money in 2007 and 2008 that the new Fed, which is really her Fed, and to this day is the same thought process, is you basically give the banks, the main money center banks, so friggin' much money that despite themselves, they can't screw up. They have such wealth.
What's your definition of screw up? Just as a
loan people too much money, do stuff like they did in the mortgage crisis.
So
then we have $35 worth of debt on every dollar there.
So is it the
greed
via balance sheet or via how it was?
Well, balance sheet is if you've got bad loans. I mean, if you got nothing, but it's not like you should never give a loan or should be.
Bernanke, where I was going with that, didn't Bernanke do a lot more than she did?
Well, what I'm saying is, yeah, he was a disciple, and so essentially they made all these people. He was before her, wasn't he?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, but they end up saying, okay, well, if these guys have $90 bazillion, next time we screw up in the Fed and not see something coming, they're not going to be a problem. Well, where do you get the money from? Other people, right? So you have zero interest. You give them all this money in the world, and other people. You know, they pay zero interest, and yet they're charging people 18 to 30% on their credit cards. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that sounds like a great deal. And if you don't have a certain balance in your account, you get...
And they were giving them 1.5% overnight to bring the money they gave them for nothing back to the Fed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 1.5% is not a lot, but if somebody gave us, like, $2 billion and gave us 1.5% on the $1 billion that isn't ours, it's real money.
When... I think it was... She went back to the Fed, what, like 2004 or something?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. But here's my royal bitch, and you know, and I feel the same way about her I feel about Hillary.
Which was before the crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
And then watch Bernanke kind of open
yeah, she was
the
on
door
there
for
sure.
the helicopter money.
Yeah. Well, but my point is, when she leaves the Fed spot, she goes out and goes on this very short-term speaking tour with every one of these companies that was supposed to, she's supposed to be regulating, and she makes $7 million.
They probably all
you know like
each
was,
other.
Was it like a 2-year period?
That's just a thank you.
But it was Citadel gave her what $500,000 or something
yeah,
for speaking.
45 minutes.
Right, let me get this straight. You can't do that. In my morals, you can't do that. And then to add insult to injury, at least if you're gone and writing a book or something, you can. Now those I don't care who you are. People say, oh, yeah, these guys got, it's tax deductible. Nothing gets me more frosted than an argument about you can write it off or it's tax deductible or blah, blah, blah. Simple fact is, rich people don't like giving people money any more than poor people. In fact, they probably like it less because that's because they live for money, in my opinion. So, anyway, they give her this dough, and all of a sudden, she gets another, then she becomes Secretary of Treasury. Now, did she get paid for what she didn't do before, or was what she wasn't going to? I'm not saying she's a crook. I'm just saying it looks terrible.
I think you're just jealous of her, like,
oh, that could be
15 advanced degrees of, or what's it called?
Honorary.
Honorary, yeah. She's got all sorts of the accolades from those higher education institutions.
Well, Ted Hesburg, the former president of Notre Dame, had more of those than just about anybody. There's one guy who's got like a zillion of them. But Ted Hesburg had way more than Janet Yellen, and I'll tell you what, I trust him more than I do her.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, it's like a retired policeman going around to all the bars he was supposed to be, you know, watching over, and they all have a big benefit for him every night. Well, why would anybody do that if they didn't owe you? I'm saying you're kind of making light of it, which is somebody
I'm
your
moral
age.
Moral relativist.
You're a moral relativist in some regard. Well, that's what they all do.
What kind of a situation is that? After you're expected to rescue the economy, after you're expected to control interest rates, which who knows if you can act, or for
but she
how
also
long
is supposed to be regulating these people.
Regulating the people.
The Federal Reserve, it does, is a regulator.
Right.
By the way, so is the Secretary of the Treasury to some extent. How does a regulator get paid $7 million, but if people are supposed to regulate?
There could have been more, probably. She probably wanted to keep it down for political purposes.
If they wouldn't have brought her back, she'd probably still be doing it. I mean, you didn't see Paul Simon
doing
it.
Yeah, she actually took a pay cut to come back to government
service.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Well, but it's, you know, it's
all about relativism.
What do they say? The revolving door.
Yeah.
You're in, you're out.
The incentives. What did Charlie Munger say? Show me the incentives and I'll show you the results.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Well, the incentives are that. So,
well, you know,
and you're in a no-win spot.
Well, the guy's 90-some years old. You think he hasn't seen people of every stripe in his 95 years and knows what people are about? People don't change. That was the most, I mean, that was the most fascinating thing I found when I ditched my third Italian class in college. I did a course in a semester in Greek tragedy. You read the stuff people are doing. It's the same as what people are doing today.
They've got
people don't change
now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, anyway. So we went down to see the Irish play yesterday. Of course, Kevin, it was always a treat to see Kevin, and he's got some good friends. So we ended up meeting over at the new Morris Inn, which is a totally redone.
Renovated?
I think it might have been scraped and rebuilt, but
gutted.
Well, it was a 1952, you know, cell block kind of hotel, which, of course, in today's world, people always know that's not good enough. So they put up this really nice place now. So we went to the restaurant and had a nice lunch there. They don't forget to charge. Let's put it that way.
You got to make the boosters happy.
Without a doubt. And, of course, all the Notre Dame people are taking little babies' pictures in front of the Christmas tree. I mean, it's kind of a... But they got so many buildings going up. I don't know what any of them are.
Did you sponsor one of them?
Oh, God, no.
The PTI Center for Financial
Regulation. They just have money and they just keep building, even if there's nothing to build about. You know, art. Anyway, just whatever. But, I mean, it's the whole idea of we have to justify our $75,000 a year. But anyway, we go to the game, and they get absolutely mashed by Marquette, which means my Marquette buddy Bill Murphy, I don't know if I should dodge him this week or what. I'll never hear the end of this one. But Marquette absolutely, they won by like 15. Let's put it this way. The game was not as close as the score would indicate. They beat them at every facet of the game. But Marquette, I don't know the full... Oh, Bill
and
I'm
that
sure
was
will
at Notre Dame.
Yeah, Bill,
so
I'm sure will fill
worse.
Me in. Oh, yeah, Bill will fill me in, but I think the new coach at Marquette had 9 or 10 freshmen last year, and they got a little better as the year wore on. And this year, they're just faster. They're a little bigger. They still don't have a whole lot of muscle, but they play solid defense and they can shoot. And I'll tell you what, they're going to give some of the teams in the Big East, you know, some stuff. You know, they're going to
give them problems.
And I saw something on the way down. I've never seen before in all my years of driving. And I've seen trucks blow a tire, especially if it's a recap where the thing flies up and almost hits you behind them.
Oh.
And it's always fun. But yesterday, we're driving an I-80, and all of a sudden, we see this guy in front of us having trouble hanging on to his 18-wheeler, tractor-trailer unit, and he's kind of swerving and having trouble. All of a sudden, the guy behind him, another brother trucker, kind of blocks for him as the guy slows down.
Wow.
And somehow the guy, he blew a front tire, which I've never seen before.
Be
and
most
somehow
dangerous.
That's the one that's not double, obviously.
Yeah.
And somehow or another, the dude managed to get the thing to the side of the road and stopped, and that tire was all the way down to the wheel, and it was just smoking. The smoke coming out of it, I'm thinking, this poor guy, I mean, how he didn't, you know...
Some fast acting.
He must have had some serious fast acting. I've never seen it before. And, you know, you can just smell it. The whole thing, the whole road smelled like burnt rubber.
Wow.
I mean, boy. I mean, the guy was all right, and thank God for that. But it was kind of weird for a second.
Yeah, even the big car is no match against those.
No, God, no. I mean, not even a Suburban wouldn't stand a chance against that thing. So, yeah, I'm happy for him. And I don't know, who do you get to come out and change that? God, you got to get towed in.
I saw a CTA bus. You know, one of the double CTA buses getting towed by, it had to have been like a...
Why don't you get towed? Sure.
A double...
Well, those wreckers...
One of the big red
ones.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The wreckers got six wheels in the back. Those things... What do you suppose that tow costs? But that wrecker's got to be $125,000 if it's an ounce.
Oh, at least.
And they're capable of pulling a full semi.
And in the supply shortage, you should see the auction farm equipment stuff. Stuff that was sold 6 years ago are still going for almost list.
Yeah, oh yeah. Hey, we've had a little bit of a theme lately about if we are, we keep getting back to it, if we are going to be, if, I'm not making a market procrastination, but when the market starts to go flat, people start referring to, quote, a stock picker's market, which means you got to pick the winners and stay away from the losers, which, of course,
isn't that always?
Well, you always want the one, even if you're going up, you want the one that's going to go up faster, right?
Faster. It's always about more.
Yeah, it's always about more. But, I mean, in theory, there's always going to be some place that does okay. Now, it's obvious the FANGs and the FANGs Plus have been not what you want to be in this year. I mean, they're down, what, $3.5 trillion or something in market cap. And that was my calculation like 3-4 weeks ago, and some of them are down more. And the full NASDAQ's been down 7.4 trillion or whatever. That's a week ago, somebody's calculation. So these are huge numbers. Now, some areas, like I say, I'm actually kind of surprised, even though it's not a commercial or anything. I've been saying on the air that one of the groups over at NFO that I do business with, has actually made money because they swung over into defense places. They're either unchanged or up a little on the air because they overweighted all the defense companies. And got out of the Amazons and stuff pretty much early on. And it was a spectacular year. You'd think I'd get a phone call saying, who are these guys? I haven't yet, which is kind of weird. No, it's kind of odd. People are so locked in to this, I got to have my money at Merrill Lynch. I got to have it at this place, that place. Those people don't do anything for you. They put you into something, and all of a sudden you're down, and you somehow you stick with them, thinking they're doing something for you. But they're just not. And if you want to manage... You know, if you want to just be in the market, God's sake, open up an account at PTI, buy yourself some spiders, some Qs, yourself a diversified ETF portfolio, and just go home and sleep. You don't need them.
Sleep is a good indicator of
how you're doing. You don't have to pay somebody a percent and a half to be in the market, for God's sake. You know, if you expect somebody to do something for you, yeah.
But, over the course of 10 years, yeah. That actually costs money.
Well, it depends. I mean, obviously, I think that this year we've been down with our protected stuff. We're down... Depending on the person, depending on the indices they picked, we're down from 1% to 6 maybe or 7, which isn't bad when you're
outperformance.
When guys wanted to be in the Qs, which are down 30, right? You know, I mean, you're down 4 or 5.
From here, though, would you rather be long the Qs or the spiders?
I think the Qs might have a little further to go.
Yeah,
but you know, but the Qs, because the volatility is higher, it's much easier to deal with. So even if it's down a little bit, you get more for the calls. So it's actually maybe a little easier to deal with. The Russell's a possibility, too. I mean, I always have, whenever the client says, which would you like, the Qs, the spiders, or the Russell, any given day, you know, Greg, I really don't know. You know, some...
There's this good Howard Marks thing over the week, and kind of alluded to it before. he was being interviewed, and they said, you know, they always want a buy or sell from me, or they, the media wanted him to say buy or sell, and he goes, it's really, the only thing I can say is, if you try to reduce it down to buy or sell, you're not going to win.
No.
You got to need to think about stuff like aggressiveness. So if you've got $100 for the month or whatever, you know, where are you going to put it? Are you going to put $50 in the Qs and $50 in the S&P, or are you going to do $50 in the T-bills and then hold the other $50? Or how aggressive are you going to be is really the question for the majority of people who want to earn a return, rather than people who are just interested in preservation.
Well, plus I'll take a shot even at my clients, which I don't want to do. But the retail,
he takes shots at everybody here.
Well, but the retail somewhat mentality is, if it's essentially stoked by people on TV and various and sundry pundits. And one thing I will say, Greg, and I bet you'll agree, but I'm not sure. There's a huge difference between whether you like something. Now, there's going to be somebody that says, you know, if you like something, a company and a product, you'd like to be in there because you like the product, you think it's going to be a success. That's true, okay? Especially if you're talking about a 30-year return. I mean, you'd rather be in, you know, soap, I guess, because hopefully people are still going to be taking a bath 30 years from now. So, I mean, yeah, there's something to be said for that, but also, there's a big difference between you liking the company and liking the price. You could drive up to my place in a, you know, an old GTO, and I'll say, God, I really like that car, Greg. And you'll say, you can have it for like half a mil. And I don't like it that much. I mean, but still doesn't mean I don't. So there's this. You end up a lot of times when you deal with is they want to be in the thing that was up yesterday or last month or that year.
Yeah, emotions drive markets.
Yeah, the problem is you can't trade yesterday's market. I mean, the first example is when I first
you start, can.
Well, you can. Just
sometimes
not, just,
works.
Just not well.
Sometimes works.
Well, I'll give you the best example.
How long is it going to work?
Well, I'll give you the best example. When I first went over, I was doing some stuff for NFO. I mean, I've always got my people here. But at NFO, I was doing some stuff, and I got a lot of new clients, and we spread it around. We put like maybe 10% in the XLE. This is 3 years ago. And the XLE goes from like 32 to 28, and the rest of the market starts to move. Every single person basically said, "You got to get me out of this XLE. It's a dog. It's a piece of crap." This is the oil piece of the.
That was 10%.
That was it. Was down. It was.
It's a good thing it wasn't 100% Qs.
Yeah, it was 30. Was 30. It was $30.
Yeah.
Well, now it's 83. And meanwhile, the other stuff is all down. And now this year, everybody says, we need to get some of this XLE. And I'm like going, right now, I very seldom, you know, give any kind of a...
So you missed that boat?
Oh, bleep, yeah. but I mean, we have, but now the XLE...
The good thing is you can bank on people always doing that.
Yeah.
So the short term, you can rely on those emotions to swing things all over the place.
Well, now I think that the XLE is way too high. And when I don't say... It could go higher tomorrow. I mean, do not sell it because of me. But what I will say is if you look at the comparing charts between where oil is, granted, you know, the refineries have a bigger spread now. There's other reasons in there for these stocks to make money other than just playing the price of oil. Because some of those stocks in the XLE are oil services and their oil refineries. Now, refineries are doing well, I think, because the spread there is pretty high. But even now, with the gas prices going down, but that doesn't mean that, I mean, right now I think that it's a relatively not a good buy because the price of oil is going down dramatically and the price of XLE is still way up. So I don't know where the driver is going to be to go further. That doesn't mean, I mean, for me, it's
so
just...
So if you're up 1 year 50% or so, you might want to be thinking about taking profits rather than adding.
Or selling calls closer to the money or buying puts closer to the money if you're going to keep the position and just hedge it. S&P futures up 975, NASDAQ futures up 26. For the rest of the show, we have Mr. John Flanagan calling in, and Greg's going to hang around, and we're going to have Mr. Mike Murphy talk about the soccer stuff. That was exciting, wasn't it?
100%.
We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas in the studio, and we have Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 975. We were down last night, so we're bouncing a little bit here. We got a Fed meeting this week, and we have CPI tomorrow, so we're hovering in any rumor before those numbers. Dow futures up 54. I don't really have any. The only stock I see with any kind of big movement here is Amgen's down $7. That's in the Dow. Every other stock in the Dow is up a little bit. Or that's the only red ombre. The rest of them are all green. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 50. That's 0.4%. Then these guys catching up a little on Friday because our market fell apart on the close. FTSE down 16.2%. CAC around down 24.4%. We're in Asia. We got the Nikkei down 58. 0.2%, Shanghai down 27, that's 0.9%. We have the Hang Seng, which has been flying to the upside, is actually down 438, 2.2%. Bonds, we've got the U.S. 10 years minus 3 to 10-year rate, 3.53. Again, it's got this TLT running to the moon here, which is the ETF for long-term governments. The Bund is down 2 basis points at 1.9. Japan is 0.25. We're in oil. We've got oil's down 0.26 to 70.76. So I'm saying oil's come down from over 100, and the XLE really hasn't come down much at all. Brent down 48 cents, 75.63. Natural gas up 63 cents, 6.88. So no longer under $6. That's a big move, almost a dollar in the last week. We've got gold, which has been rallying. We'll see what it's doing today. Down 520, but still over 1,800, 1,805. Silver down 9 cents, but 2,362. Copper down 4 cents, 383. Over in the crypto, the Bitcoin down 186, under 17,000, only a little bit, 16,934. And we've got the S&P, or the Dow, not the S&P. The Dow is actually up a little on the day. That's why the gold's down a little bit. The Euro's down to 1.056, going down 32 basis points, not much. And we've got the British Pound 1.22. Again, British Pound traded 104 when it got way down, and the Euro was 97. So we're back up significantly from that. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. I can give you the traffic. I actually just drove in. So.
Yeah, well, good morning. Currently 6:36 a.m. on December 12th, 2022. Yeah, traffic in Chicago. Like I said, not doing too bad this morning. Looking pretty regular. Keep in mind slippery roads due to earlier rain. Weather in Chicago right now 37 degrees and cloudy skies. Expect a high of 41 degrees today. This week we're looking at the possibility of some snow on Friday, rain on Wednesday and Thursday. In Phoenix, 45 degrees, cloudy skies. Expect a high of 66 degrees in the afternoon. Yesterday in the NFL, Minnesota Vikings played Detroit Lions. Lions won 34-23. This is only the Vikings' third loss compared to their 10 wins this season. They currently rank number one in the NFC North, Detroit Lions in second. Philadelphia Eagles won their 12th game this season against New York Giants, 48-22. Eagles with a winning percentage of 0.923, highest in the NFL currently. Week 14 of the NFL wraps up tonight. Patriots playing Phoenix Cardinals. The game starts at 7:15 p.m. tonight in Glendale, Arizona. And in the FIFA 22 World Cup, tomorrow we'll see Argentina play Croatia. Catch that game at 1 p.m. Central Time on Fox. All for now, Chief, back to you.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
Good morning, Tom. Hey, Greg.
John, think for a second, because I'm going to, as we're talking about a stock picker's market, and your job in the next year or so is to find us all kinds of companies that are in the housing commercial area, maybe REITs that people can make money on, even if the whole rest of the market sucks. So how's that for a challenge?
Oh, brother.
Yeah, there you go.
You give me something hard to do. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask Greg, before we come to you here real quick, Greg, is there any, in the whole grain area, I mean, obviously we have people, the prices in the world have gotten a little high for, you know, a significant portion of the world to actually eat, scary as that seems. Is there, are there 5 or 10 companies that can sort of, I'm not actually going to rattle them off now, but are there people who definitely benefit by that we can, that aren't privately held, that you can actually invest in and that haven't already run so far up? I mean, I'm not looking for an answer right now, but I mean, is there a solution, you know, in the market?
How aggressive are you?
Well, that's, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is if the next, let's just paint a scenario. If the next 5 years we're going to find the S&P still at 39.50, but if that happens and we start talking about this, quote, stock picker's market, we've been talking about maybe the defense industry is maybe the defense industry might be a place to hide, might be accentuating. Is somewhere in the food production area a place to hide, and maybe is something.
I think you've missed a lot of that. I would point towards that as be more of the inflation, how far inflation is going to go. Meaning, as soon as you start seeing the, say, farm and grain, like say ADM and Deere, as soon as you see those start to turn, that would be a better indication of do we have actual falling prices for food. And same thing with the oil companies you were talking about earlier. And maybe they're staying up this way because they've hedged out, you know, however many months or years that's available to them in the futures market, and they really make the markets there. So if they actually have hedged well and they did sell higher highs, then that earnings has been, or at least partially, locked in. So maybe those would be an indicator of when to expect.
Well, some of those big companies are privately held too, right? You can't even get in.
Cargill is the, I think, largest private company. You know, Cargill, yeah. Coke, I think Dreyfus is mostly private. Maybe they spun off a few, but the big brokers and the big processors are making money, tons of cash right now. And so where they put it, what they do with it, do they give it back to investors? But if you've got ADM and you've only got like a 1.75 dividend or something, you know, that's not that great compared to what you're making. So can they hold it? And I, again, me, you know, just me, I'm looking at those more as a leading indicator rather than a investment right now.
Well, Jan, flipping to you, is it, I mean, it's too early to tell, I think, on the, because last week we were just talking about foreclosures downtown, and we haven't seen any kind of a spin to the upside on downtown use, I don't think, at least right now. But if you sense a bottom in any kind of big commercial real estate with these places going for, I'm going to say, 25% of the cost of building that building again, are there companies, and again, this is not a today's answer, but are there companies going forward that you might want to be able to participate in some of that, or some REITs? I think there are. I just don't. It's not a really strong part of my background. I mean, I know there are. We actually have a few clients that are really into that might want to come out and talk about it. But are there any? I mean, you know, we can't just say BlackRock because who the hell knows what's going to happen to those guys? But is there a group that an area in there? Hey, Matt, I think Mr. Murphy is trying to call in as well. You might want to track him down.
All right. Actually, both of our other lines are down right now, so we're going to have to figure that out in a little
Phones
bit.
Are ringing off the hook.
So I thought we had four. Whatever, just do the best you can.
All right, sounds good.
We have to drop Jan for 15 minutes. I guess we have to, but unfortunately. We'll let him try for a couple of minutes, Jan, before we do that. By the way, did I tell you how good AT&T has been about this? They can't keep the 800 line working. We had the group we had before that, it worked for 10 years without a problem. As soon as we transfer over to AT&T, they have issues. And they say, well, you know, we don't know if it's our issue, but we think it might be yours. And if we send somebody out, it turns out it's yours, we charge you $1,500 just for the guy to do nothing.
Yeah.
And every time they reset the system.
Work in Chicago.
Every time they reset the system, it works for another 8 weeks, then it goes out again. So it's got to be on there. I mean, this is sort of insanity. But
it happened last week when I was on your show on Thursday, and my phone went out, and I noticed my internet was out too, because my so-called landline is really just, you know, it's an internet line.
Right.
It plugs into my router, so that was down. I came back on shortly after that, but I called back in with my cell. But that's happening more and more frequently, I've noticed, with AT&T.
All right, John, we're going to have to dump you for 15 while we have Mike, and we'll call you right back.
No problem. I'll be listening. I'll call you back.
Okay. Why don't you handle that, Matt, and we'll figure out how to get those things working for tomorrow.
I'm still a bull for AT&T, by the way.
Well, the good news is, Greg, you've been coming in.
Not a bull. I like the 6% dividend.
Well, one of the groups, one of the biggest trading firms on the floor is one of the biggest trading
CTC
is
Citadel.
Yeah, not one of the biggest ones, but their issue is that they went over to AT&T and they were skunked for like a month or two.
Oh,
you know, I mean they were able to trade, but everything didn't work. You know, one of those things. I mean, it was I'm going to tell Mike here that we're calling.
Well, there's
him.
Plenty of space if you come and want to sit on my lap.
Yeah, I mean it's. You know, but I mean, this is something that we never had a problem with for like 30 years. I mean, you know,
the companies are switching from actual copper or whatever landlines to voice over IP, and they're dedicating the time and money towards the people who are working from home rather than the entire loop, which is half empty.
Yeah, but it's really crazy, but. You know, I wonder, you know, are we going to be able, through the various people we have on the show, to identify some places where, you know, everybody can make money, my clients and the listeners, over the next 5 years, if the market is flat? You know,
how aggressive do they want to be?
Well, that's, I mean, I would say that if you
got $100, what percentage of that is going towards growth versus income versus...
Well, it depends on what you're doing, right? I mean, if you've got, I've got a lot of clients, say you got $2 million, and you're in the spiders and you're in the queues and you're in that kind of thing.
Sounds good to me.
Well, but if all of a sudden you say, you know, hey, can we take $300,000 of that and spread it around among, you know, 10 REITs if we think that sort of place is going to be, or 10 defense stacks or
15%
or 10, you know, or some of the say the world food places, whatever they are, when you identify them, that's not horrible. I mean, in fact, it worked well this year for the people who were doing the the Defense Department stuff. Now, whether or not they can sit with that position next year, I actually think there's a little more gas in the tank because of the stuff we're running out with Ukraine, and I mean, it looks to me like this arms race is going to go a little higher. But that doesn't mean the stocks don't already have that priced in. You know, so you got to be careful. You don't just...
The kind of way I look at that is you're going to get a certain amount of income from your portfolio, hopefully, or at least gains, hopefully. And then what percentage of that you're either reallocating, or if it's cash, if you're getting 6% dividend from AT&T, whatever, great. Are you necessarily going to plow it back into AT&T? I don't know.
Well, but if AT&T goes down 5%, you're skunked.
Yeah, you still get the dividend, so you're even. But But where are you going to put that new cash is my question. So if you're getting, say, you know, $150,000 a year in new cash or whatever it is, say, you know, 5% or something from option sales or whatever, where is that going? Like, how risky is that stuff going to be? So if they want to plop 15% of their portfolio in something new or sell 15%, you know, what's that excess going to pay? Is it worth it? Do you have you're giving up a certain return on that 15%. So is the new return, how much do you really expect to make on it over whatever you were getting before? So if you were getting 5% before, you know, maybe you at least want 10 because you've got to A, pay the taxes or whatever, and then B...
Well, we've got a whole bunch of people now that are in short-term treasuries, but every 6 months or every 30 days, whichever they have, we're going to reassess and say, is there someplace else to put it? Mr. Murphy, here we have you. We're having phone issues as usual.
Good morning there, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Although I'm not a real fan of AT&T, like ever, but certainly not lately. I mean, it's you know, it takes like 2 months to transfer an 800 number now.
No, I didn't know that.
It's the world as you and I knew it, the easy stuff is not easy. This has become everything's a science fair project. But hey, how stunned were you at the Morocco? And I actually, Audrey and I, we found this. She found it, a little bar out in Orland. God, it's every Southside guy who used to live, every little old South guy, God, he used to live in Beverly or St. John Fisher's, like moved out to Orland. And that's their bar now. These guys hang at the bar. It's like I went around and introduced myself. I probably could find Mike that I played softball or basketball with half the guys there. But 40 years ago or something, but we watched the game there, and this big huge black dude that evidently was from Britain, nice, real nice guy, and he played a lot of soccer, and he was bemoaning the fact what Britain had three opportunities near the end, and they I should say England, because the other guys, Wales, are their own team, they whacked all three of them over to the one of them must have gotten a 10th row. What kind of a kick was that?
Well, that's, you know, it's unfortunate. Harry Kane, who's probably their best player by far, I mean, he missed that penalty also. He could have tied it with that. So
that's what I mean, yeah. Hey, explain to me something before we get into the individual teams. How the hell does that wall work? When do you get a free shot, or when do you have to go through the wall? How does that... If anybody sees soccer, you see there'll be a kick where you get a free kick, but all of a sudden everybody gets a line up between you and the goal. Then sometimes you don't get the... I mean, how does that all work?
Well, it's because there's been a foul on the player, so then the referee deems it, you know, that he gets a free kick. And then if they're close enough to the goal, which, you know, when they're right outside the box, like what happened, and then when the Dutch did it, you know, they get the opportunity for the free kick, and they put up the wall so that the wall blocks at least a portion of the goal for the goalkeeper. And then you'll see sometimes now they have a guy lie down behind the wall so they can't sneak in those low passes. And that's the Dutch, really, that was a very, it was an excellent play that they did in order to tie Argentina.
Is there any priority to who gets
to stay? If you put in the indirect free kicks, if you put it in, they get a goal kick. It's not like that's a real goal. It has to touch a different player.
Okay, but is there any priority in who gets to stay and where, or do you just go there and muscle your way
in? They work that out pregame because they want the taller. Well, there's certain players that they mark. So in other words, they play them man to man, so they don't want them getting loose. So usually it's the forward players, the more offensive players will be the ones that are forming the wall, and the defensive players will be concentrating on defense.
Okay, and but I mean, there's no. It's every other team gets every other spot or anything like that. You just grab it first. I mean, what if there's two guys on one team standing there? You can't just muscle between them, can you?
I think they can. They do.
Okay, it's a lot. I mean, a lot of nuances here that I, of course, know nothing about that I'm finding somewhat intriguing. But I will say this, Mike, as a general criticism, boy, these guys make the NBA players look like straight arrows. I mean, everybody's crying on every play.
That's true. I mean, it's not quite that bad, but they do a lot of what we would call flopping, and but some of it's actually merited, because supposedly when they get hit in the head or near the head, then that's a foul, and anything close to the head, these guys flop and they try to get the free kick.
But if you just go for like a regular, what they call a tackle, as long as you hit the ball first, everything's sort of okay, right? But if you go for the ball and you kind of just nip the guy, that just means the other guy gets the ball there. There's no massive penalty on that. And then if you come in with like an attempt where you like nail him in the back of the neck with a forearm, then that's like a yellow card, because that's sort of an intent, right? And then if you really clock him, then it's a red card, correct?
That's correct.
But now, the guy was winging out yellow cards like there was no tomorrow, and not so much in these quarterfinal games, but the day before. What would possess anybody to want to be that ref? For God's sake,
they have to qualify for it. They generally have ref in their, in whatever their highest league is, their nation's highest league, and then the FIFA chooses them based upon their qualifications. And the one guy, I forget which game it was, but he kind of lost control of the game. I mean, as you just said, he was giving out yellow cards left and right. And it's because, they were ready to rumble on the sidelines. And
which game was that? I remember.
I think that game might have been Argentina and the Netherlands. It was. And they were desperate. Both teams were kind of desperate at the end.
Well, it seems like they're dying to give out the yellows to make people behave, but the last thing they want to do is take out somebody's star, so you didn't see anybody get two. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, in one of the games, that was one guy on Morocco did get two.
Okay.
Because they played with 10 men for about the last 5-10 minutes.
What was the one team? Was it Argentina where the big star didn't even play? What was that all about? Is he hurt or just he's too old?
No, Neymar played. That was Brazil, but he just didn't. The Brazilian coach had a 21-year-old kid in his fourth international game take the first goal of the shootout, and of course he missed. The nerves got to him. So that was just poor gamesmanship on the coach's part.
I couldn't believe how I'm ship was flipping games here. This poor guy at the bar, he was beside himself with the. He goes, look at the second kick where the guy just rifled it past the left corner up top. He goes, God, the guy went for power instead of directions. Direction's always more important than power. But the one kick, Mike, it must have been the 10th row. I never saw anything so high over the net. And the guy only kicked it from like 15 yards away. You know what I'm talking about? Was it the penalty kick?
Yeah, that was, I think, Harry Kane on the penalty kick. He just, his nerves got to him too, which is, unfortunate. I bet you the guy from England was very
Morris
upset about
is his
that.
Teammate on their club team. They know each other. I mean, they played each other they play with each other. So my guess on that one was Morris found which way he was going. Kane knew about it as he was kicking, and he had to kick it harder because he knew he got the direction that they both were going the same direction. So you just power through at the end.
Well, don't the best guys, Mike, sense the goalie actually moves and they're able to kind of alter their shot to go to the other side, or is it just a 50-50 guess?
I think it's more than a 50-50. And, Matt, you're exactly right about the French goalkeeper, because he and Kane have played 10 years together for Tottenham. And so that, again, was a mind game between the goalkeeper and Kane, and that time the goalkeeper won.
Mike, what's the prize for this, other than a massive national honor? And what do these guys get?
There's probably a great deal of money involved too, Tom, but I don't know. And then that gold trophy that they keep bringing out to the middle of the field.
Now, the country gets that. The individual players obviously don't get one, right?
No.
But I bet you that the individual players get some sort of money bonus from their individual nation or their nation's soccer federation.
Well, the one game where they went to 2 15-minute things the day before, they went to the shootout. Those guys, man, they're in fantastic condition, but they had to be beat at the end of that game. It was 90 minutes plus like 12 plus 30.
That was Croatia and... I forget who Croatia was playing at the time. Oh, Brazil. Croatia versus Brazil. And Croatia, you know, they made it to the finals the last time in 2018 in, I believe it was Moscow. And this time they're close to getting to the finals because I think they're going to beat Argentina tomorrow. And if you noticed in the Argentina game, Messi had a deliberate handball, and he didn't get called for a yellow card. It should have been. Any other player in the world does that. Does the handball, he's getting a yellow card. And that's what the Dutch players were complaining about to the ref. He didn't give Messi a yellow card. And Messi then would have been out of the game later because he received a yellow card later.
I saw the one game where it was the French England, where they actually had a replay. Who called? Is that because the linesman told the ref he made a mistake, or how do you get a replay?
Well, there's what's called a video review ref, and they tell the ref on the field, I think you ought to stop play and go review the play, and then it's up to the ref on the field as to what he does. Sometimes they blow him off. And sometimes they just can. Sometimes they stop play, and then he goes and reviews the play.
So it's not the linesman tapping him on the shoulder. It's actually a video reviewer. That's got to be new this time, isn't it?
No, they've been using that for a while, and they're getting more sophisticated with it. But it also could be the linesman tells him that he thinks he ought to review the play too. It's because that it's a team of 4 or 5 refs. That work together, the two linesmen, the head ref, the video guy, and then there's a person to get people on and off the field. So they're all working in cohesion.
Is there any chance going forward? I mean, hockey, when you and I used to watch them play, it was professional anyway. Actually, there was a difference in hockey. When we were in college, there was two guys that acted as both linemen and refs, right? They could call penalties, but where the professional leagues were two linesmen and one ref, and only the ref could call. Now the NHL is two refs and two linesmen, so they've added another guy. But is there any call to get two refs in soccer or no?
Tom, I'm not sure about that, but Gene and I were talking about that, and that poor guy, the one individual ref, has to cover a lot of ground. I mean, there was one guy that they said... did, I think, 10 miles running, covering the game. So there's an awful lot on that main ref.
Well, I mean, in America, I mean, they probably do the same thing overseas, but here, my brother, my niece used to play, well, she still plays, and some of these teams are so dirty, the minute a ref turned around, they'd be, like, whacking the other girl. obviously, in America, when there's rules, you know, you want to have 28 refs in football, or however many they have. Because if you do something wrong, you're supposed to get caught. But the rest of the world doesn't feel that way, do they?
No, I don't think so.
Well, Mike, we're going to try and get John back here, but We got you penciled in for later in the week after the semifinals, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the stuff going on. We're trying to find if the markets are flat, if but a lot of people are predicting over the next few years, we're trying to find areas that maybe we can put some cash out for people and they can make some money. And the three things that have kind of, at least I'm looking at it, are maybe some of the Defense Department stuff, which you're involved in, and you and Lou, and Greg's going to come up with some companies maybe in the food production business, and our buddy John Flanagan's going to come up with some stuff, and maybe, you know, some REITs that can buy some of these buildings cheap. Hey, went down to Notre Dame yesterday, saw Kevin. Everything was fine. There's about another 100 buildings. I don't know what the hell they do. God, the team sucks. Marquette just killed them. They lost.
Yeah, I saw that. They rolled over them.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way: the game was not as close as the score would indicate. And you know, there's no students there. I guess they're having finals week, but they couldn't, the whole student sections, there wasn't a person in them. There might have been a couple hundred people in the one down section, but the up section, there wasn't a student there.
Wow.
I mean, the finals are one thing, but God, you got to get to go to the basketball game, especially on a Sunday. I mean, what's wrong with these people? Man. Just saying. Of course, Mike, you were always huge on finals, so, you know, I mean, I bet you'd have been at the game.
Oh, yeah. I would have been at the game. Reflected in the finals.
I think we'd have been there together. But anyway, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you later in the week. We're going to go to break. Come back, Mr. John Flanagan. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 34.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 33. It looks like our buddy Matt here is going a little country on us.
A little bit of John Prine.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you do both kinds of music, country and western.
Got to have those two at least.
Yeah,
at least.
We have Mr. Flanagan back.
We do indeed.
John, Matt's doing a nice job given the phone constraints he's under, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, A+.
Well, thank you.
How do you feel? How do you feel like if you're the guy paying for four lines and they never work? Just saying.
It's obviously not a consumer's market.
No, it is definitely not a consumer's market. The what did you what's the company you're talking about, Greg?
I was looking out totally out of my element. But just as
that's what you're lobbing at Jen. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, just as an outsider, what do we think about Boston Properties? That one's BXP. Big dividends. They seem to have decent financials, in that their earnings were somewhere between $1 and $2 for the.
Well, Jan, why don't you? We'll go ahead and answer that, but then I got a more general question for you.
Well, you know, I'm kind of leery of any real estate conglomerate operations right about now, only because so many of them are in places that are experiencing, you know, convulsions, really, I guess is the best word for it. And the jury is still out on where this is going to end up. So if you've got concentrations of office property in central cities, or if you have
shopping
malls, there's just too much in flux to say where this will go. And add to that the fact that this is causing a real depression in commercial lending, because the banks are having to eat so much of this debt that's, you know, you can't sell off. I think that's going to hurt for a while your ability to develop or to expand. And I'm concerned that, you know, nobody has really been in this kind of territory before. And even in economic downturns, you've never seen a transformation of real estate usage like we've got now. And I don't know the way out of it. I know there's money to be made, but I don't know if you can predict how much of it is in the hands of politicians who've got their own agenda about what they want to see happen after this shakeout, and how interested they are in getting people back to work in offices, and what that means for, you know, what's going to happen 5 or 10 years down the road. I've just never seen anything like this. And I know there's investment opportunities, but I couldn't tell you what they were.
Would you rather be on the lending side, or would you rather be on the owning side?
I would almost rather be on the owning side, I think, Greg. But I'd be trying to shed as much as I could of what I had, because I don't think you can kind of cushion yourself against what's likely to happen. And it's going to continue to happen throughout 2023. I don't see it turning around, at least in Chicago, where all of a sudden there's going to be, a rise in occupancy rates or a rise in rents. I just don't see that as a likelihood. So I'd almost rather, try to hang on to what I thought might have some survival value and get rid of the stuff that I maybe should have never gotten involved in the first place. But the lenders have no real choice here. And they're stuck, I think, no matter what. There's not too much they can do except eat it, and take a huge haircut over and over again.
Well, Jan, what two kind of industry questions as we, I mean, it almost seems like if somebody were to, beam in from the Enterprise with like $90 bazillion and handed it to the three of us, as they say in the South Side, it's one thing kind of going forward saying, hey, I like those guys to be able to sit around and wait for everybody's worst day and be the buyer. That's always, I'm going to say it's not easy to do, but it's relatively easy to do. But if you're already in up to your eyeballs, it's kind of hard to figure out whether even a firm like BlackRock, who I assume is, I guess I assume that they're capitalized okay, or a lot of these places, you really don't know.
I think Berkshire has $100 billion in cash or cash.
Well, they do. But what I'm saying is, you really don't know. I don't know how big their real estate. I don't know. I guess you don't know if BlackRock can be the buyer, because they're the one who's getting their ass kicked in the building. It's hard to be both. I mean, are they the people that just took the $50 million hit? Yeah, it's a great buy here, but it's sort of like if you own a house in 2009, you bought for $235, and maybe even paying your mortgage, you got some money in the bank, and all of a sudden the house is worth $150. Well, yeah, you'd love to be a buyer 150, but guess what? You own a 235. So, I mean, I guess it's hard to tell.
Commercial has been the one that's really gotten hit, though.
Right.
Residential, not as much.
But
right?
I'm saying it's hard to figure out who's the one that's getting nicked when you go to buy in because you think people can take advantage of it. They might be the one getting nicked. I mean, it's right. And I mean, plus it used to be, and again, Jen, you can opine on this, is we used to have an awful lot of banks here in Chicago, real banks. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, the smaller ones aren't real banks. They sure are. They take care of me and a lot of other people. But, I mean, if you had a problem, I'll give you a great example. When the trucking industry deregulated, it was basically the death knell for Continental Bank. They had financed all these truck companies. And Continental Bank, at one point, my partner's wife was of counsel of Continental Bank, and she told me they owned so many trucks, they didn't know what to do with them. I mean, when all of a sudden, you know, you didn't need paper to go from one state to the other. And I'm going to say it was the trucking industry that was, I won't say largely responsible, but certainly partially responsible for Continental Bank going under, right? So every time there was a crisis in any industry, be it commercial, real estate, whatever it was, you could always point to the bank and go, oh, God, you know, Sears Tower or whatever the hell they call it now, just looks like somebody lost like $200 million. You could point your finger around like if it was the, you know, the winds of, oh, no, that's First National Bank or that's, you know, that's Continental or that's somebody else, right? Or there's somebody that was on hold for it. It's really hard to figure out who the hell that is as an investor, generally. So your point is well taken, that you got to be careful when you start investing in these guys that they're not the ones getting their ass kicked, right?
Right. You know, and something, I guess maybe the only parallel I can think of is post-depression, where, you know, cities like Chicago, with a very dense downtown office retail market, really were completely stagnant for at least 25 years. I mean, there were no groundbreakings for office structures in the Loop from like 1930 to 1955. And that says, you know, maybe everything was overbuilt because the buildings kept getting higher and higher, but the economy was teetering. And it took a war and a post-war boom and a baby boom to reverse it. But it took a long time for downtown Chicago to reactivate. In the meantime, a lot of money went to the suburbs. The growth there in commercial and, you know, home ownership really outpaced the city and still does. But it's, you know, that was a long period of, you know, it took 30 plus years for Chicago to become an attractive downtown office market. And that's all changed now too. The conversion of a lot of office space to residential space seems to have, you know, peaked, I would think, right now. But that seemed to be a saving grace for a while, that, you know, you could take these buildings and instead of demolishing them, you could refurbish them and make them attractive, you know, places for people who could walk to work. But that's when there were people working downtown in great
numbers. There were tremendous advantages. I mean, how can this doesn't sound lecherous, does it? But I'll tell you what, if in the late 70s, if you wanted to see, say, if you're appreciative of the opposite sex, all you had to do is walk through Marshall Field's lobby at lunchtime. Every terrific looking lady in the city was down. It was in there doing something. I mean, people, ladies especially, love shopping in their lunch hour. Maybe it was a treat to be downtown. I mean, right? Fields was,
it was a treat to live downtown. Yeah. You know, for a while anyway.
I mean, Marshall Field's was the hub of activity, of lunch there, you could have a hot dog there. And by the way, you could chat.
Well, Walnut Room. Affordable and fast.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get a great lunch with maybe a drink or two for under $10 easily.
Well, I mean, what was a good, great corned beef sandwich at Burgos was like, what, $1.75 or something?
Wow.
The beers were 35 cents a draft when I started working downtown, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, you either have this hubbub of activity or you don't. And it's very difficult to... You know, it's almost like the economy. I don't know, I say this, people think I'm totally nuts. A fully functioning economy is almost like the human body. You can't say which part is more important. You know, you can't. I mean, because if somebody's dead, you look there and go, "Let's see. Well, the brain's not telling the heart to beat. And by the way, the heart's not beating, so the brain's healthy enough to do that. By the way, it's not eating. By the way, it's not pooping. Well, we can just get it pooping. Well, wait a minute. That's not. You don't even know what's first." just knowing it all works, right?
Right.
And same way with a thriving economy, because, I mean, but the downtown serviced, I mean, Pullman was making landing craft. They were making all, there was people on the north side that were making PT boats. There was, I mean, I can't imagine how much they were working at Southworks. Hmm. And not to mention the communication equipment out of Hawthorne Works. I mean, the amount of people working here in war industries and other stuff, I mean, how much stuff was coming out of the Ford plant on Torrance Avenue? But all that stuff was financed and everything through downtown, right? The main right. banks were down here. So there was a, the thing was just, now whether or not we'll ever see anything like that again, I don't know if it'll be anything like that, but it doesn't mean it can't be slightly different but effective, right? I mean,
when things could kind of grow organically, and the great cities, you know, grew just like the human body grows and regenerates, you know, it knows pretty much what it needs and wants, and it knows what the appetites are, and if you can do it efficiently and cheaply and safely, and you'll have people beating down your door for it. So, you know, downtown was always a great place to work, but at the end of working hours, you know, 5 o'clock, a whole different economy took over that we can't even imagine today.
Yeah.
The entertainment and the cocktail lounges and the blues clubs and everything else were all over the loop. You know, hotel orchestras, stuff that we don't even think of as having any kind of draw today. But you couldn't, you mean, people would stay downtown till 2 a.m. after working all day just because there was a ton of stuff to do and you had restaurants and everything else to service that. I don't see how you can remake that given what obstacles you have now. Any kind of a nightlife, really, it would have to be so heavily policed and monitored, and security cameras and everything else, that I don't think a lot of people even want to touch it.
Without
that kind of draw, you don't really have any kind of magnet for making people either want to live there or stick around after work.
Well, that somehow, John, and I don't know how it's going to happen. That has to change dramatically. That has to change dramatically. I mean, I think that as much as I love people, me included, having certain rights and so forth, I don't know that you don't find a way at 3 a.m. in the loop to stop every fifth car or not let them out of here or something. Or, you know, I mean, somehow or another, you can't have every night, or every other night, a black SUV stolen. I mean, just start with figuring out if cars are stolen, because the people that do all these dastardly stuff, it's not like it's their car. I mean, there's ways to do this in a way where you don't mess with people's, you know, rights, but still you don't let people driving around in a stolen car at 2 a.m. looking to shoot at somebody. There's got to be a solution here someplace, and it has to happen.
Maybe Palantir's the buy.
Well, whatever. I mean, so we're trying to, you know, for the listeners, I'm struggling here to find places, and we know that someplace, somewhere, and someday, Jan, is going to be somebody who has a different idea, is going to, you know, whatever, do something in the downtown area, do something on these suburban malls. It turns them into something that is almost like a, you know, a thriving city or something. There's going to be an idea, and we want to be with that person, because we still have people that are having babies, that want places to live, that want to have some fun. I mean, it's not like we've changed. So the question is, and which of these industries is hell? That's what I am, as a money manager. You know, if I can say, okay, instead of being, you know, 8% in defense companies, if I should be 15 or 20, which I don't know for the next year or two or three, I'm more than happy to do that. I don't know if there's any kind of ETFs there. Probably aren't. If they are, they're pretty much horse bleep ETFs, because there's been five companies will be 50% of the ETF. Duh, like five companies now are 50% of the NASDAQ, although it works for a while. And then, you know, are there places that aren't? I mean, you know, are there going to be, with the you know, zeroing in on world hunger, especially if, you know, Ukrainian stockpiles stay down, which I hope they don't. I mean, is Greg going to be able to dig up four or five companies in that business that are not just the same old companies, but up and coming?
What I hear from you right now is you want to be long security camera makers and
you know,
stuff.
I don't know how that's not a 5-year plan.
Yeah, Palantir.
Well, I mean, but you don't get, whenever somebody gets the contract to put security cameras up on Orion, it's always somebody who's greasing some alderman. I mean, you know, I'm going to be blunt here. It's somebody who's paying somebody off. The last group was from Australia, right? If they ever came back here, they'd go to jail, right, John? I mean, How the hell do we? First of all, I don't think I would invest in them. But how, if you even wanted to, how would you? You know, how the hell are we supposed to get involved in an Australian camera company that's greasing five aldermen? We don't even know.
If,
you know,
if the trend throughout the major cities is crime and other things that, you know, need to be cleaned up, then invest in the cleanup companies.
Well, that's true. But I'm saying, but it also gets to the point where, I'm not being a naysayer. I'm looking for the solution. But you say, for instance, somebody makes this. Well, suppose it's GE. And you know they're going to make a boatload on this product. Well, hell. If you look at GE, it might be 2% of GE's business. I mean, are you going to buy GE because 2% of their business is taken off? I mean, same thing with a drug company. I mean, everybody tomorrow is taking aspirin. Okay, well, who the hell makes aspirin? It's Bayer out of Europe. And, oh, by the way, aspirin costs you nothing.
CVS. Yeah. Well, it costs you nothing and you sell it for $5 or $10.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's not. I mean, is it 2% of their business? I mean, when this vaccine stuff, not to get on that subject, when this vaccine started out and the government was giving Pfizer and Moderna, and there were seven companies. Johnson & Johnson was one of them, and that they gave a bunch of money to
BioNTech, Pfizer.
Well, to essentially Moderna. Build ahead in hopes that the what they were working on. So they were supposed to have a million vaccines or something in the tank, where if they got approved on a Wednesday, they could start shooting people up on Friday. Shooting people up is a horrible way to say it, but giving people shots on Friday. And I don't. But I mean, at the time, now of course Pfizer's managed to make this into quite a deal for them. At the time, though, Jan, you were on, and I said, you know, it looks like, say they got, you know, $30 million from the government, or actually like $100 million, $100 million from the government. Say, $100 million was the pimple on the ass of an elephant. Pfizer. I mean, they've managed to keep it going. it sticked people like 300 times, and they're down to like, you know, kids that aren't even born yet, damn near. Why they should be, and we can certainly talk about that how crazy that is in most of our opinions. But the fact is, when it started out, you would probably never have bought Pfizer or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson based on that $100 million, because especially Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer.
I knew people who did.
Yeah, well, I do too, but I'm saying if you actually did the math, say, wait a minute, these guys are $10 billion companies or whatever the hell the number is, and it's $100 million. It's 1/100th of their revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, you really want the stock to go up? I mean, in fact, the first day, remember, Jan, I don't know if you were on, Pfizer got some contract when the thing first got approved for like the first batch, and it was, you know, a couple hundred million bucks, which is, you know, is a lot of dough for us. Didn't the stock shot up like 4 or 5 points, and the biggest seller that day was the chairman?
Yep.
And right back down the next day, 3 or 4 points. I mean, it was up, you know, essentially a buck and a half, right about where it should. But some idiots are like, oh no, this stock should be 20% higher. Why? Because they got a 1% increase in revenue? I mean, it's...
Well, the stock used to be 50. I don't know what it is now. It's probably back to 50.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, because they have, I mean...
the free money from the government.
Well, these other stuff that they sell. I mean, hell, none of these guys have managed to... what's the... was it Lipitor came off? Did that come off patent? I know the Viagra, Levitra, and the other one that used to be commercials on TV, that eviscerated NFL football and CNBC. People have an older client. I mean, the two that were on? Was it Cialis? That was the weekend. No. Is that the weekender? Yeah. The two of them were what? $50 million at the NFL combined?
Yep.
And as soon as they went off patent, they said, screw it, we don't need another commercial ever. That's a lot of dough. I got to believe they were a big chunk of CNBC's budget.
Hmm. You know, I hear what you're saying, Tom, about, you know, getting the Australians or anybody else involved in security cameras or whatever, but just to air sort of a private grudge I've got, if we had security cameras and traffic, you know, speeding cameras installed on the Dan Ryan.
We do.
But I mean, do you, has anybody you know ever gotten a ticket for speeding
on
the Dan Ryan?
No.
I
don't know if we have speeding.
My neighborhood is crawling with these cameras, and you can't go on some stretches on Foster Avenue or Pulaski or Cicero, I don't care how careful a driver you are, without getting at least
one ticket every month. And, you know, I've had this happen to me and family members and other people I know.
Foster's the worst.
Because I know Lori Lightfoot wants, you know, tickets to be given if, you know, you're more than 6 miles per hour over the posted limit. But there's all sorts of penalties built into this where if you're near a school or a park or a forest preserve or something else, that there's an aggravation to the fine. And it's just pissing people off royally who are just trying to conduct their lives. They're not, like, doing, you know, gun running. They're not committing crimes. They're just ferrying their family around or going to or from work or whatever, doing their family errands. And if you're 6 miles an hour over the speed limit, you get dinged for this. And there's no way you can really escape it. I mean, you can ignore it and you'll get booted. But look at the revenue we're losing by not doing this, the interstate system. And if we can't get the state police to pull anybody over, at least ticket the hell out of the ones who are going 50 miles over the posted limit. But yeah, Nobody seems to think that that's necessary or useful or important, or it sends the wrong message or whatever. But I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'd rather do business with a crooked camera company and rake some of this money in and maybe tone down what's going on the expressways than live with this, because it's not getting any better.
John, I don't know why you brought this up, because you know you're hitting a nerve with me. Somehow or another, and this is... You're supposed to be my attorney, not the one goading me to say stuff.
A good attorney does that too, Tom.
Somehow or another, and I don't begin to know. I just lobbed this one out there because we got to go to Audrey here in a few minutes. But and John, you can hang in with. Well, actually, you can't because you're on the phone. You're only one person on the phone. You can somehow or another. The people like you and me and most of the people in the city, even though they abhor this 6 miles and over thing, you just get the ticket in the mail, somehow we're all a bunch of, I know the word I want to say, but I can't on the air. Let's say weenies. Somehow or another, we put up with it. You know, thank you, sir, may I have another. Somehow we put up. We bitch a little bit. We get an editorial. But Lori Lightfoot or the next person in, all of a sudden it becomes part of their revenue, and the thought of changing it back, no matter how unjust it is insane. I mean, cab drivers told me that they would get a ticket a month just because, even if they weren't even in the area, they'd get a parking ticket. It just became revenue. Yet somehow or another, the people who are the drug runners and the shooters and the people that are going 120 miles an hour on a Ryan or 110, somehow or another, they have political power. And I don't know where it comes from, but I mean, you should be able to, in my world, if I was mayor, there would be a law passed that said anybody who's going over 90 miles an hour on the Ryan or any expressway, maybe, I mean, I'll shoot for 90 to start. I'd like it to be 85. The car's impounded. We're dropping you at the bus on the way home if you don't call Uber or a cab. I mean, and the fine would be, you know, $1,000 or some huge number. Yet, obviously, somebody doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the hell is somebody is. Somebody's in power. I see people flying by. I know people don't necessarily want to stop them. But you know what? Here's what I would do, John. The idea that you let one poor cop in a squad try and corral somebody like that on their own is out of their mind.
Yeah.
I would have people that have 3 squads in front of me, and I would just be driving along in my junky old Suburban, and with a camera on the front. If somebody flies by me at 100, I pick up the radio and say, black SUV, this license number, he's coming at you, pull him over.
Mm.
And have 4 squads surround the bleep. And guess what? He gets a ride home, you know, or maybe he spends, you know, the night in jail. Jan, inside of a month and a half, we could clean up 200 cars. And they probably are the ones doing all the damage.
Yeah,
for some reason, we don't want to do that. Now, I can't imagine these guys are stuffing money in Lori's pocket, or if she figures that's really her clientele, or what she figured, but somehow or another, they get a pass. And I don't quite understand why, because they're liable to kill people. Or the guy
the solution seems as simple as you put it, Tom, and you can say the same thing about why we have a border that's wide open, but everybody in Washington says it's secure. It's because they want it to be open. Somebody has political clout to keep it open the way it is. It doesn't make any sense from a human safety standpoint or drug prevention, you know, drug abuse prevention standpoint, to have a border that's just like a sieve And we got people overdosing all over the place in this country because of what we're letting come in through the border. But, you know, if somebody wants it that way, and you can't seem to ask too many questions about who those people are and how the hell do we get them out of the way.
Well, real quick, we'll run over here a little bit, Matt, but last quick story. Robert, my buddy at the Fed, Robert ended up ended up moving COVID and stuff, and Robert had all these really super shelves. And why the hell he bought them, I have no idea. They're like commercial shelves. So one of the ladies, she's been on, she is a lady, a nun, Sister Stephanie, was a new order of nuns, and they I think they're out of the old Holy Angels place out on the west side. So Robert says, what are they going to do with these shelves? I said, let's see if Sister Stephanie wants them. So sure enough, she does. Can't wait to get them. So we'd load all these things. I mean, like I said, I don't know if Robert was planning on opening a restaurant or what. Anyway, Suburban's loaded with these super heavy-duty shelves. We head out to this horrible neighborhood on the west side, and we give her the stuff. And, of course, coming back, because of one-way streets, I'm going down some regular old street. And here's some ass in the middle of the road with, like, a fluorescent windbreaker around so everybody can see he's the drug dealer. And the guy's in the middle of the street selling drugs. This is 10 o'clock in the morning. Wow. And I'm like, okay, I know nothing about this neighbor. I know nothing about selling drugs on the street. And yet I'm sitting there going, Robert, is that how you think it is? He goes, yeah, he's selling. Well, Robert used to be a policeman in New York. Yeah, the guy's selling drugs. Well, how is it that he's standing there, John? They're trying to
solve murders at that point, so they're not.
Well, that's one part of it. One part of it is somebody's involved in the trade and is getting money from it. And
that person probably sits on the city council. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like.
It's
pretty, you know, it's pretty sad. But if there wasn't money there, there wouldn't be stuff. All right, John, we got to let you go because Matt's got to drop you and call Audrey.
Yeah.
Because she's just texting me, hey, I can't get in. Duh. we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. SPV is up 10, NASDAQ is up 23.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Lone Oak Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. At Burn on the Board, we'll have Audrey Johnson in a second. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 24. Actually, I'd ask Audrey a question. Probably should ask John or Nancy will be back next week. She had a well-deserved vacation. Dow Futures up 78 over in Europe. We've got, well, these guys are kind of catching up from Friday, so we're like the only place that's kind of up. DAX down 46.3%, FTSE down 21.3%, CAC around down 26.4%. So muted to the downside over there as we're waiting for the inflation numbers tomorrow and the Fed thing on Wednesday. I'm saying the expectations are 0.5%. Obviously, you're going to have a news conference, but we're also concerned about this inflation number. We're in Asia. We got the Nikkei down 58.2%, Shanghai down 28.9%, Hang Seng down 437. It's down 2%, but the thing is up from 14.5, I'm going to say 2 months ago, maybe 8 weeks, 7 weeks ago, to 19.5, so it's still at a massive rally over in Hong Kong. Bonds down 2 basis points, 3.54. The Bund down 2 basis points, 1.90. Japan, guess what? Unchanged at 0.25. Matt, are you getting tired of me saying Japan is at 0.25, everybody?
I'm tired of hearing about other people's successes.
Yeah, yeah. It's a oil upset. I'm not so sure Japan being at 0.25 is a success.
Okay, all right.
Oil up 75 cents, 71.77. Brent up 33 cents, 76.43. Natural gas up 68 cents, 6.93. They were under $6. I'm going to say last Monday, Matt, they were under $6. Bucks. I mean, that thing is just all over the place. RBOB, maybe it's this storm coming across. Must make things colder next weekend. RBOB unchanged at 205. Gold up down 960 now, 1801. Struggling to stay over 1800. Silver down 5 cents, 2366. Again, we had Dan Janitas last week talking about he likes silver better than gold here. I've got a lot of gold miners for my people. I'm thinking maybe shifting a little over to silver. I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
Copper down 4 cents. Crypto down to $135. $16,095, so slightly under $17,000. If the U.S. dollar, because we see gold down here today, you can expect the dollar to be down, up, and well, actually the dollar is slightly down with the euro because we're not seeing much movement. Euro is 105.7, British pound 1229, so both up a little bit, which means the dollar is down relatively.
Yeah.
Matt, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning. Currently 7:38 on December 12th, 2022. Traffic in Chicago, expressway starting to wake up this morning. Nothing too out of the ordinary yet. Keep in mind possible slippery roads due to earlier rain. Weather in Chicago, right now 38 degrees, cloudy skies. Expect a high of 41 degrees today. This week we're looking at the possibility of some snow on Friday, rain on Wednesday and Thursday. In Phoenix, 47 degrees, cloudy skies, expect a high of 66 degrees in the afternoon. Yesterday in the NFL, Minnesota Vikings played Detroit Lions. Lions won 34-23. This is the only the Vikings' third loss compared to their 10 wins this season. They currently rank number one in the NFC North, Detroit Lions in second. Philadelphia Eagles won their 12th game this season against New York Giants 48-22. Eagles with a winning percentage of .923, highest in the NFL currently. In close second place, a three-way tie between Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs, and Vikings at .769. Week 14 of the NFL wraps up tonight. Patriots playing Phoenix Cardinals. Game starts at 7:15 p.m. tonight in Glendale, Arizona. And in the FIFA 2022 World Cup, tomorrow we'll see Argentina play Croatia, that is. Catch that at 1 p.m. Central Time on Fox. All for now, back to you, Chief.
The Bulls game last night, if anybody wants to watch the last... The last couple of minutes. Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed.
Hey, Aud.
Good morning.
The Bulls game. The Bulls. First, they have a guy. Well, he made a really terrific defensive defensive rebound. It was actually an offensive rebound, and he got fouled on. So the Bulls are down a point with like 0.4 seconds. So the guy makes the first one, and so he ties it. So he makes the second one. The Bulls win. So he misses the second one. The guy's an 85% free throw shooter. But he made a terrific play and made the first one, so you can't bitch too much. So they go into overtime. The Bulls are losing. They come flying back. All of a sudden, one of their guys, one of their best guys, one of their smartest players, Bulls throw into DeRozan with 0.5 seconds left in a three-point area, and the guy fouls him, which is like the biggest no-no you can possibly do in basketball, is to foul somebody on a Hail Mary three-point shot. So DeRozan cans three in a row to put the Bulls up by a point with a half a second left. So all of a sudden they're inbounding the ball, and Stacey King's going, Don't let him lob over you. Don't let him lob over you. Sure enough, this guy lobs one in. Guy reaches up, bats it in, and they win.
Oh.
Now, why you wouldn't have that the middle totally loaded with Bulls players? Because you're not going to do that from outside. The only way you can do that is if you're close to the basket. Because with half a second, you have to catch and shoot. You can't even bring the ball down, or you can't catch it. It's got to be one motion. But you're not going to do that from more than 3 or 4 feet. They let this guy get the thing when it's 6 foot of the basket, and he somehow taps, half-assed taps it, shoots it in. I'm going, what is with these guys? Whatever. Yeah. Obviously, the people you're playing against are pretty darn good. So, anyway, I'd had to watch it, and then she had to hear that. So,
I was very sad to see the snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yes. God. This is after we watched the Irish get their ass kicked by Marquette. So should I avoid Bill Murphy? Yeah, should I avoid Bill Murphy this week, or should I just go take my medicine?
I think you're going to have to talk to Murphy about it.
Yeah.
Can't avoid him.
No, can't avoid him.
He'll hunt you down.
He'll find me. All of a sudden, hey, aren't you stopping up tonight? Whatever. So, Lon, we were talking about we're trying to identify businesses that if we go through a decade of a flat market, which none of us wants, obviously. But if it happens, you know, it's happened before in my experience in the business. If we go sideways, let's say 10 years, 2 years, 3 years, there's going to be industries that do better than that, and some industries that are going to do worse. And we're trying to figure out the ones that are doing better. We had Mike Murphy and Lou Michaels talk about maybe opportunities in the defense industry. You know, Lou Moore is more in touch with some of the new stuff that's happening. And Mike, you know, he was in Army Intelligence and more in tune with, you know, just-in-time inventory and who makes the, you know, the mundane stuff, the bullets, the shells, the rifles, and those kinds of things. So between the both of them, we're going to try and identify a few industries or a few companies that aren't already overpriced, because it's not like we're the first people looked at this. And we've got Greg Pappas finding maybe in the companies in the food industry, as the world continues to get hungrier, as these prices are high. Who's going to be able to, maybe with government largesse, maybe not, maybe just higher prices, who knows, are going to do well in that. And John is thinking about companies that, if these real estate commercial prices keep slinking down, what kind of REITs, what kind of companies that people invest in, maybe we can, a lot of those companies ought to write they're private, right? So you can't really invest in them, I think.
That is as you would think. I mean, you can always get your publicly traded REITs, but yeah, a lot of these companies are just publicly held. But there's always some place you could, you know, feed off the trend.
Well, so we're trying to identify, and we're in the early stages of this. I mean, I'm nowhere near making a trade here, so nobody who listens should be either. It seems like a lot of stuff is happening. You got to, you know, Matt, as I used to say on the trading floor, there's three kinds of people in this world. Some people make things happen, some people watch things happen, and the rest of the people wonder what happened. You know?
Sounds about right to me, yeah.
And we don't want to be in number three.
Yeah.
I don't know that we're in number one where we're gonna change the world of commercial real estate.
Yeah.
We certainly can be somewhere between one and two, where we keep our ears up to the and our fingers up to the political winds, and we try and find some of this stuff. And what we've, you know, we had when Nancy was on a couple weeks ago. And the rates had gotten all the way to what, 7.5, 7.625, and now they're pushing 6.5 again. And you were saying that if you financed a house a month ago and you had a few closings, I won't say a few, you had a couple, but they were pretty good. With this time of the year, that's pretty darn good. What now? What's the procedure for somebody to go, wait a minute, I just got a 7.625, and now they're 6.5. What is that person? Do they have to? I mean, obviously.
Well, that's what people think. You could just go in and swap it out. You can't right away. Now, I believe you've got to wait 6 months to refi, and that's wherever you're at. If that's a Nancy question, because there's several different things attached to that. But basically, you can't like go in and refi every week. First, it could get really expensive, but you have to give it some kind of 3 months, 6 months. Nancy will be back next week. I would say you make that a Nancy question, so I don't give all the listeners that info. But it's not something you could just go to the week after and go, hey, yeah, I don't like my rate. So that I say we hold off and talk to her for sure about. But it's something that is going to be on a lot of people's minds, especially the way the world is moving around and hitting here and hitting there. But I want to go back to what you were talking about with, you know, picking the best area of stocks. And to me, people always have to eat. So, yeah, foods are good, but I'm keeping an eye on the seed companies like the Monsantos. I mean, you know, farmers can't even plant their own corn. I mean, you have to buy seed from these companies. If you try it, even, you know, it's not like people don't think about where all that comes from. Well, now that the seed companies own all the rights to these, a farmer couldn't say even keep some of this corn, throw it in the ground, and grow it again. I mean, you cannot do that, or you could really get driven out of business. So I think it'd be interesting to check into a couple of the seed companies, watch the prices on those, and also just, I think it's interesting for the public to know how controlled the farmers are. People think the farmers have it easy, and boy, it's a hard road to go. You know, you can't control the weather, and other companies are trying to control you.
Well, as I was referring to, and you know, maybe when Greg's on next week, we'll talk about it. But these seed companies, they own like all the rights to the seed. You can't even you can't just keep. I know nothing about seeds, but if you have one of their seeds, you can't. You know, I'm gonna put it this way: if you plant a tomato,
take your corn and replant the kernels you get. You cannot do that.
Well, if you go to the store and buy you know, Burpees heirloom tomatoes, okay, and you grow tomatoes. I mean, I'm Italian, so I know my grandfather used to do this. You can't just keep a tomato, get your own seeds, dry them out, and plant them again next year. You think you can do that? Most people would never do that, but you can do that if you know what the hell you're doing. Try doing that with corn. If they see you with corn the next year and they look, they'll be suing Ma and Pa Kettle for like millions of bucks. They're heartless. Matter of fact, one guy, Matt, I don't know if he's had it off for a second, but this is a guy who had the seeds that his neighbor sowed on his farm was a windy day, and some of them blew over to the other guy's farm, and he made seeds from the seed they didn't even buy, and they came after him like a ton of bricks, right? And
it's vicious. People have no idea how controlled our food source is.
Well, it's sort of like you when you went out and got the. You bought the poodle, and you had a sign that you weren't going to have puppies with the poodle. I mean, it's sort of the same thing. But anyway,
speak of the devil, she's right here.
Yes, I can only imagine. These are interesting worlds. And what you have in some of the trade issues with Russia, I think most people, certainly people listening to this show, know that Russia is a major supplier of some of the ingredients. I don't know if they actually export fertilizer, but they export a lot of potassium, right, which goes into the fertilizer. So you're gonna have companies that have pricing power in there. Now whether or not, you know, those, I mean, there's places that we need to talk about, because I mean, hell, my job is to make money for people. My first job is not to lose it.
Fertilizer is interesting. I think anything with food, I think you're going to watch. I would watch rental housing. It's going to be a very interesting thing, and I think this whole FTX has made people more aware. I was watching Bitcoin this morning, and you know, I kept telling you when it was like what 36, 37. I thought it would go to 25, and if it went to 25, it would go to 16. Well, it's 16.9 something this morning. So I think the next step is 13.
Oh, I think you're probably right about that, Rod. But it's these companies keep. But you know what? There's a lot of dough in there, and there's a lot of people that probably are very powerful that don't want to trade Nate tomorrow. And it's down like trillions of dollars already.
That's possible, but it doesn't mean. I just think that. People hear what they want to hear, and I think this scandal with the FTX maybe could make people aware. Nobody wants them to stand on the bandwagon, but sometimes it's not the best place to be. I think a Bitcoin of some type will be part of the future, but this is not pegged to anything. It's just as insubstantial as we go back to what you and I talked about with the Dutch tulip scandal.
Yep.
This is the same thing. So when people realize at a couple of keystrokes, this could all go away, I think people would view it a little differently.
Are you becoming a poet on me? A man he hears, but he wants to hear, but disregards the rest? Isn't that Simon and Garfunkel?
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, as you would say, I would be a little contrary occasionally.
Oh, imagine that. Gee, is there any other male, I guess, or female that finds their significant other contrary once in a while? I guess that's what keeps us young or something. I don't know. But one of my clients, well, I actually have a couple of clients that are involved in, I guess you consider, if you're multi-family, you know, 4 and 6 flats and so forth, or maybe 25 to 100 unit buildings, is that considered commercial lot, or is that just big retail?
No, that's not retail even. You're just multi-family housing. What, commercial what? Is your strip malls, your stores, your shopping centers.
But if you
auto shops, anything like that, business type things.
But if you bought like Lake Point Tower with, you know, 300 units, is that considered commercial? Is that still considered?
It's still housing.
It's still all just regular. Okay.
You might see it run through a commercial business because they're used to handling larger type deals, but mostly, I mean, it's still housing. So housing is still differentiated from a business thing.
Okay.
Different classification.
So I think those guys are doing very well, because they buy places that are, I won't say run down, because they're not. They're just maybe dated, and upgrade the whole building. Any building that's up. A lot of times, you're the one who educated me in this, and you're talking about some of the on the southwest side. A lot of condos went up, let's say 20 years ago, and they sold in the neighborhood of. 160, 165, and now they're priced a little less, or at least they were for a while. They might have come up, but you know better than me. But really, the reason why they're down is because they're not new anymore. It's not like the prices. If somebody actually put the $25,000 in there to fix up the bathroom and a half in the kitchen and made it new, it'd be the original price or maybe a little more, right? They're just a wear factor on a lot of these places, right?
Yeah, it goes to the whole trend. Nobody wants anything that's not pretty. So a lot of investors have gone into these older buildings, rehab them, and either made them rentals or just sold them, resold them as condos. So it is, again, a repeat of a pattern that we saw in the 70s. So, everything old is new again kind of thing. So it's just you're recycling, you're reusing. It's nothing new. It's just you have to watch where the patterns emerge, pretty much.
If you had a place now, Odd, with say 20 to 40 units in a decent building, and maybe you have to upgrade this and that, right now, my thought would be, and I'm asking you the question, you're probably better off just renting and you're going condo, aren't you?
Oh, well, rents are exorbitant right now, so probably, yeah. I mean, there wouldn't be, at this point in time, it's 6 of 1, 1/2 dozen of the other, but people are getting far more for a two-bedroom, two-bath condo rental versus what, even at a little bit higher rates, what you would pay to buy. It's still cheaper to buy and rent, but a lot of people either choose not to buy or can't afford to buy or don't realize that you could buy something with 3% down, which sometimes, for a lot of people, is equal to putting down the first month's rent and a security deposit. Sometimes that's your 3%, and you could own it instead of making somebody else rich.
What? How much is it for the next couple of months? I know you have, I'm not going to speak out of school, but I know you have, some listings and some people that are looking for places. I mean, you always do. How much of a difference is the 7 5/8 going higher like every day versus back to 6.5, maybe even going a little lower, like at least for a while? It's got to make things a lot easier on a buyer, I would think, right now. I mean, you don't think it makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. So anytime, this will, of course, maybe get a few more people out or down. My people go, oh, it's coming down. They better start looking around to see what there is. So it's people still have to live somewhere. And actually in, October, November, anyway, listings have rebounded in the last 30 days. So all of a sudden, the market is kind of adjusting, assimilating all the information. But in the end, life goes on. People still move. People will, you know, people get married, people die, households are formed, households are broken up, and things have to be sold and moved. So it may not be, and I hope it's not, as frantic a pace as it's been, but even when times are horrible, even with the recession, things still happen because life forces you to make choices, and good or bad, and you have to move on. So it's still going. It's gotten, again, a little busier. It's picked up quite a bit in the last 30 days. You can see the difference. So already people are adjusting, rethinking things. And I actually think that we are going to have a pretty good winter. And I think it's going to start picking up again. It's going to be a good spring.
Well, I mean, just for me, you know, I got to bought my first house, what I pay, 12 or something. But I'm going to say, Rod, that we've been 3%, 3.25% is abnormal, even though it took like forever, because clearly people are supposed to be making
it. Oh, it was free money.
Yeah.
It was just free money, and people, young people who've never purchased or, you know, lived through a real estate cycle, this is just free money, and I would always encourage my people to buy something to get a foothold in. It was just an amazing opportunity in the last 5 years, especially if you back off the last, especially before the huge price jumps came in the last 2 years, it was still good. But if you bought prior to that, you've just done
very well. Well, if you got a 3% mortgage,
in the last 5 or 6 years, you've done very well.
Well, if you got a 3% mortgage before the prices moved up, the world is your oyster. If you bought at the tip top at 3%, You might actually be a loser.
You're still not bad. You're not. If you have a nice house, you could still probably sell it for what you bought it for,
right,
or maybe a little more if it's a nice house, because inventory is still extremely tight, and there are still multiple offers going on. So it is. It's been a very unusual last 2 years, and as long as I've been doing this, you still learn something all the time, and it's just a little different, but it's starting to track again. So I would tell people, if they're looking for a house, they should still keep looking, get your ducks in a row, and then keep an eye on those mortgage rates.
Well, two things, Rod. One is, I mean, historically, you know, 6.25, well, you know, it's probably, has been, quote, the rate. I mean, if people are making 3.25 on risk-free loans, which they should, or deposits, you know, the difference between 3.5 and 6, you know, it's not a bad spread for the bank or whoever the hell is giving the mortgage. Banks don't really do that old anymore. But when it ran up to 7.625, I would have paused there. That's too high. I mean, it's too high.
Well, it's too high regarding the spread, but since the banks are passbook holders' savings account to participate in this, it's a different story.
In other words, I'd say I would pay 6.25. Pretty much willingly. 7.625 would cause me to pause. Hey, we only got a minute here, Rod, but you were telling me yesterday, of course, Audrey, as everybody can imagine, not only will look at a house no matter where it is, because she just loves it, and it makes me watch all these remodeling things on TV, even though they're not horrible, because I actually used to remodel some stuff. You showed a couple of places, and I'll just say in the Palos area, but the same thing's happening on the North Shore and other places. The really outlier house, the massive house, They aren't trading for anywhere near what the cost of putting them back together or whatever be, are they? I mean, one of my listeners and clients lives up in Lake Forest. Actually, I think he's running for mayor somewhere up there. So the houses that are like $8 million or some massive things with the big gates and the whole bit, nobody wants them, or a lot of people don't want to live in a place like that. It's more like whatever it is. It's something you see on TV. And they're trading for nowhere near replacement value. And you're saying some of the things, same stuff's going like in Palos in some of these areas, in these real high-end houses. Is that something, just a phenomenon? People don't want the upkeep? Or what do you think it is?
No, I think that is, again, it so depends. People who are very wealthy want a nice house, period. It's a matter of where they want to be and want that. But the house, I don't think we have time to get into it, but the house you're talking about was one of the most well-built, well-planned-out houses I've seen that was built, I would say it was built in the late 70s, but unbelievably beautiful. I mean, we're talking like an 18-room home, just a four-car garage, something that was thought out well ahead of its time. And the only thing is it needs updating, but unbelievably well-built. And I would say the difference between the list price of the house and replacement value was about $1 million. So that's not always true, but it was true in this case, and it's interesting to see what happens.
Well, I mean, not everybody needs 6.5 bathrooms.
Mm. Yeah, to me, it'd be too much stress and strain to keep up with getting toilet paper. You know, that's just a lot of work. But if you have a house like that, you're also not doing that. Your staff takes care of it.
Well, that's the thing.
You know, when you have 10,000 square feet, you're not vacuuming your own house. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So that's what I need, right? Man, a staff.
That's what
housing staff.
The maids, yeah. The butlers, and all the...
We got all that stuff. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Take care of yourself. Good luck this week in the real estate game. SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 22. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Be aggressive. Learn how to push. Talk to him. Ask him questions. Ask him rhetorical questions. Doesn't matter. Anything. Just get a yes out of him. If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.